Chapter 29. The Bodies had already shown a habit of defeating Miller's expectations. The look of sanctuary, their unwillingness to coerce him. And now they did it again. They had told him that the gate was a window and doorway into time-space, that one could look anywhere when, and, with a little extra work, travel there. And so he'd expected something impressive, maybe a larger area with architecturally focused megacrystal arches and a nexus of concentrated light and, well, something. But the gate wasn't much to look at. In fact, it was no more than another of the beanbag-type chairs mounted on a slightly raised platform. Mara and Yeshiva ushered him to the chair, and when Miller stood before it, he stopped and looked around. "This is it?" he asked.
"Of course!"
Yeshiva said, very seriously. But Mara smiled, perhaps understanding.
"Nothing more is necessary, Tony,"
she said.
"We have reached an understanding with space-time here."
"Uh-huh," Miller said.
"The concepts don't translate to English very well,"
she admitted.
"But we don't need machinery or computers to move through time-space."
"That would be invasive,"
Yeshiva added.
"The Gecko way."
"The geckos burn tremendous amounts of energy,"
Mara said.
"With a great deal of poisonous byproduct and waste to essentially force open an unwilling time-space and shove something into it. Our way does not violate anything and actually creates a small energy surplus."
"It sounds too good to be true," Miller said. "What are the drawbacks?"
"From the gecko point of view, those are the drawbacks,"
Mara said.
"Sit down, Tony."
Miller sat. He looked back up at Mara with raised eyebrows.
"It's all done mentally,"
Mara said.
"You form a picture in your mind and concentrate lightly. The focused energy in this area amplifies the thought and moves through time-space to the appropriate point. You will observe whatever you think about."
And while he was thinking about that, Mara leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek.
"Mara!"
Yeshiva said, and Mara blushed.
"I'm sorry,"
she said.
"Just good luck, Tony. Please do what you know is right, wherever it takes you."
Mara stepped off the platform and she and Yeshiva walked away. Miller watched them go, looking for Mara to turn around to meet his eyes one last time. But she didn't.
"Of course not,"
he thought.
"That would be invasive."
In half a minute, they were gone. He was alone. Except, of course, for the entire human race, past, present, and future, looking over his shoulder. He took a ragged breath, still uncertain what he was supposed to do. How do you concentrate lightly anyhow? And what should he look at? Or what when? He could review his life, try to figure out where to go from there. But what was the best way to... to what? Nobody had instructed him. Nobody was going to make him look at or do anything. Why not take a quick glimpse at Berkeley while he figured out what else to do? As he thought it, the air in front of him bubbled slightly, as though a thick syrup were boiling over a low heat. And then he saw himself standing before a large lecture class, the students' faces. He had never before noticed how young they were. And then he was nursing a cup of coffee in his seminar, as one of his favorite grad students presented her research. She was so bright, worked so hard. And there was the kid he'd had to fail last semester. It tore a piece out of Miller, but he had no choice. Campus life, the stacks in the library, all filled with so many energetic kids. Miller sensed the pattern. Was it something he was unconsciously doing? As the images continued to move, it all focused on the kids. and he realized that it was showing him a hole in his life. He loved to teach, loved seeing a face light up when he finally hit a point that resonated with one of them. And that was because he loved kids. Miller realized he didn't miss his life at Berkeley. He missed the kids, missed what his life might have been if only he'd had his own family. It could have been so perfect, coming home to a house that
coming home to a house with emptiness, 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 emptiness.
Was that dream gone forever? Things being what they were? If he stopped the destruction of the artifact, could he go back to an improved version of his former life? A version with a wife? Children? God, why hadn't he thought about it all this when he could have done something about it? Why hadn't he realized how important a family was? A dull ache welled up inside him. It was too late. He'd put it off to finish his schooling, his thesis, to secure tenure. Always some excuse. And now it was too late. Unhappy and irritated with himself for being so, Miller pushed the thoughts away. So what? He thought. Look at all I've done that I couldn't have done with a family. And he made images of himself appear in the gate, flying across a gorgeous sunset, traveling with Professor Meyer to study the last of the Bedouin culture, and of course, the trip with Cook to Runapuake. Cook. Jesus. Dead on Artifact Island. Yuki's island. The thought of Yuki made her image appear, and more regrets. Such a short time with her, barely enough to get to know her. Yet they'd shared so much, and she was growing bigger in the images he watched. He flipped ahead, and there was no doubt. Yuki was pregnant. With his child? His child. It had to be. He moved forward through time, and she gave birth to a daughter, a beautiful child, like her mother. And as he watched the child grow, was it possible? Was he reading into it? Or did the girl look like him, too? Like her father? It was true. She had Yuki's beauty, but something about her definitely looked like him. She was his daughter, his child. He was a father after all.
Oh my God.
Miller thought with a melting sense of sweetness and weight at the same time.
Oh my God.
It is time, Tony.
Mara's said in his ear. I just want to get this across. It's spelled M-A-R-A apostrophe S. Mara's something said in his ear. Voice? Mara's said in his ear, softly but insistently. He looked up.
Time to decide.
She searched his face, her eyes moving over his features as if they might reflect some roadmap of his intentions.
Choose now,
she said, and dropped a hand lightly onto his shoulder. Miller looked back at the gate. Already the images were fading from Mara's interruption. He saw one last glimpse, the face of his daughter as she danced around her mother, excited about something she'd seen. Or was she? Was she excited? Or was it terror? Fear of something he couldn't see? The image was gone, and Miller couldn't bring it back. Not with Mara's hand on his shoulder and her presence gently insisting that he choose. I need more time, he said. Mara hesitated.
Quickly, then,
she replied and stepped behind him. Miller tried to clear his mind, tried to get back to the image of his daughter and Yuki. Had she been afraid? Of what? What turmoil could reach them there on the island that... The images swirled. Roman chariots charged. Chinese rockets flashed across the Siena sky. Hunters shot seals, whooping with red glee. Jews died in Nazi showers. Black smoke billowed from endless rows of stacks. Mustard gas floated over a panoramic battlefield of choking, gasping men. Refugees gunned down. Rainforests burning. Animals, children, old people slaughtered, falling like leaves, endlessly, over and over, through all time and all the world! Miller took a deep breath.
Let the breath find the center. Let the worry drop away.
He felt the clarity return and tried again. The images changed to current time.
Cook leaning over his desk, asking him to go on the trip to Runapalake. His first response was to refuse, but then with a little more discussion, he agreed.
The image flashed ahead.
He saw Yuki holding his daughter.
If he stepped through now, he could be with them forever. He was filled with desire to move, but stopped himself. Before he could change his mind, the image flashed again.
He saw the artifact teetering in his seaplane.
Could he stop it if he stepped into this moment? Probably not.
He watched the artifact fall. It hit the ground, the first lightning struck it.
Flash! The image shifted again.
He saw thousands of small humans with large heads and huge, pale eyes. They lived in a vast underground chamber filled with poisonous yellow air. The geckos.
Should he travel to them? But the images were changing faster now. Flash!
Satellites orbiting the Earth. Then missiles launched by sub, jet, silo. Countless nuclear explosions. A fallen Statue of Liberty covered in a snowdrift. The ruins of New York City peeking out of a new ice age. The result of a nuclear winter.
Flash!
People entering caves. Doctors performing strange surgeries. Producing a new human race. Part biocomputer. Part human. Why am I seeing this? Where is my daughter?
And then he saw her, at the same age as before, dancing around her mother, her face alive with emotion. But still he could not tell. Was it fear or excitement? Flash! The picture was gone again, and Miller couldn't focus enough to get it back.
Why can't I see her any older?
He thought. The gate showed him another chaotic soup of images.
Destruction. Death. Filth spewing into air and water.
Why can't I see my daughter with me? But he knew. Without seeing it, he was sure. Something happened to her. Something related to the chaos of a gecko victory. That's why the gate was showing him these things. And that's why the Bodies were certain of his decision. They knew. They didn't need to coerce him. But were the Bodies influencing what he saw, in spite of their claims that they were totally non-invasive? Or was he just seeing what was, would be if he failed to act correctly? And what was correctly, damn it? If it was invasive to tell him what to do, couldn't they at least give him a hint? But he knew he had his hint, his daughter. He had to stop this from happening. He had to see his child grow up and meet her father. Had to see the wonder in her face as he showed her the world. A world that made sense again. A world where neither Gecko nor Bodhi could twist space-time into a vicious playground. He had to stop it all before it even began to happen. But how? The gate flashed.
Space probe hovered over an asteroid. The surface of the asteroid rippled with color, sound, light. Pools of time and gravity moving out in waves from a strange object about twice the size of a basketball. It looked like a giant ball bearing, as if it had been machined. Its color was shifty, uncertain, but nearly always dull, pulsing with a strange light.
The artifact! He was watching the discovery of the artifact. That's it, he said, glancing at Mara. I'll stop it here. He watched her for any sign of emotion, negative or positive, but she showed nothing. Was this the right choice? Was it what they wanted him to do? Or, as he hoped, something unexpected?
If that is your choice,
she said. Yes, he told her. I can make it never happen. Avoid the whole thing. I'll stop it here.
Step through,
she said, holding out a hand to help him up from the seat.
You'll feel a few moments of disorientation, a slight discomfort, perhaps. You won't know where you are at first, nor why, but that will pass.
Miller stood in front of the image of the asteroid and looked at it long and hard. He became aware that he was still holding Mara's hand, and he looked at her. She gave his hand a squeeze.
I wish you well, Tony Miller,
she said.
Truly.
Still, there was no clue in her face. Miller nodded and turned away from her, back to the gate. Back to the asteroid, and time, space, and the artifact, and what? There was no way to know. Not from here. Only from inside the moment, through the gate. Miller breathed a deep, centering breath again, and took a moment to feel its calmness move through him. He looked back at Mara one last time.
Preserve,
she said, but it was not her voice.
Defend,
she added. It was the voice. The voice that had come at him three times before, with the bangers in Osiris's world, and out of the radio on his way to Tahiti. And now, it was coming out of Mara.
What did it mean? What was the voice telling him? Where was it coming from? And why?
But before he could think of any more than the questions, the gate whirled in front of him, and a slow but powerful vortex pulled him in.
Go now,
it said. And then, he was falling through the gate. Here ends book one of Time Blender. There was no book two. Michael Dorn is best known as the series regular character Worf, the Klingon security officer on both Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He has co-starred as well in three full-length movies, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, Star Trek Generations, and Star Trek First Contact. He has appeared in a handful of other features and guest-starred in numerous television shows. He is a licensed pilot with single, twin, and jet experience and is an active participant in many sports. The end.